Satan screwed himself. He tried to kill Jesus, thinking he was wrecking the plan. But actually, when he killed Jesus, he was ensuring his own relative destruction and his own absolute salvation. Because of the cross of Christ, everything in heaven or on earth or under the earth is going to be reconciled to God. Satan's in heaven, he's going to be reconciled to God. It's as simple as that. Hi, everyone. This is Martin Zender. I make sense for a living. Think about this when it comes to Christians. Think about this. This may be a related topic. Christians just want to belong to the popular religion. If Christians were born in India, they'd be Hindus. If they had been born in Japan, they would be Buddhists. If they had been born in Saudi Arabia, they'd be Muslim. They just want to join the religion. The only reason that Christians are Christians is because they were born in the good old USA, or else they're in England or some Western country where Christianity prevails. So they just want to be members of the prevailing religion. They don't care about God. Christianity has nothing to do with God. And this struck me like a piece of wood that's 2 inches by 4 inches. Otherwise, some people call it a 2x4. I call it a piece of wood that's 2 inches by 4 inches. It's like, wow, it's just a matter of belonging to the prevailing religion. And no matter where you're born in Japan, I just want to be a member of the prevailing religion. What is it? Oh, Buddhism. Okay, great, I'll take that. Or I'm born in India. You wake up, what's the prevailing religion? Hinduism? Oh, okay, I'll belong to that. You're born in America. What's the prevailing religion here? Just so I can join it. It's Christianity. Okay, I'll be that. They don't care. Just want to be member of the mainstream religion. It just so happens that Jesus Christ is thought to be the head of the mainstream religion. He's not. The pop icon Jesus is, but not the real Jesus. So Christians just want to belong to the mainstream belonging thing. Church. I think that's fantastic. It's horrifying in its fantasticness. Revelation 20, verse 1, through verse 3. This is Satan. And I perceived a messenger. I told you that the book of Revelation yesterday, I told you, was embarrassing to Satan. I'm trying to move on quickly here because I want to talk to you today. Am I screwing up my camera? Okay. About prophecy and the seven churches. Because we're going to be getting into the prophetic section of the book of Revelation where there are seven churches or ecclesias or synagogues. It's going to prove they're synagogues. Be no problem for a guy like me, no problem at all. Revelation 21, I perceived a messenger descending out of heaven, having the key of the submerged chaos and a large chain. That's pretty bad. You got this guy, watch out for this particular angel over here. Why? Because he has the key of the submerged chaos, yeah, and a large chain. I mean, it's intimidating enough. If you have a large chain, I would stay away from anyone with a large chain. But if you also have the key to the submerged chaos, that's pretty impressive. So this messenger has the key of the submerged chaos and a large chain and in his hand. And he lays hold of the dragon, the ancient serpent, who is the adversary in Satan, and binds him 1,000 years. That's embarrassing. And it's happening right here on the page. It's like somebody, it's like, you know, you're embarrassed. Let's say you're at a party and you choke on a hot dog. And you're trying to look cool. You're with all your friends. And you wear your best clothes and you got your cologne on and you choke on a hot dog and you turn purple. That's embarrassing enough because you're being done in by a wiener. It's very embarrassing. And then it gets worse because the ambulance comes in. Let's say they can't dislodge it. And you're strapped on a gurney. That's not very cool. Strapped on a gurney and carried by geeks in blue suits, blue jumpsuits, into the ambulance. Very humiliating. This is Satan here in front of the entire universe. I really actually feel sorry for him here as I read this. He's been being laid hold of and he's bound for 1,000 years. I will say this. At least he's being bound by a messenger descending out of heaven, having the keys of the submerged chaos and a large chain. It takes a large chain. We'll give Satan credit for that. Gotta have a big-ass chain. to bind Satan. Is it a literal chain? No. Satan is a spiritual being. It's figurative. But John saw these things that are, again, what he saw was not necessarily what the literal thing was. It was what it represented, the literal thing. Next embarrassing thing, Revelation 20, verses 7 through 10. And whenever the 1,000 years should be finished, Satan will be loosed out of his jail. It's not a literal jail either. It's submerged chaos. Now that's literal. Submerged chaos. It's chaotic down there. And he will be coming out to deceive all the nations. This is embarrassing because he's really intent and sincere. There's pathos here too, which to me is hilarious. Because we see the end of the story here. Let's go ahead and read the end of it. And he will be coming out to deceive all the nations. This is at the end of the 1,000-year period. He will be coming out to deceive all the nations. Gog, Magog, to mobilize them for battle, their number being as the sand of the sea. And they went up over the breadth of the earth, this army, and surround the citadel, the saints, and the beloved city, and fire. Oh my God, fire descended from God out of heaven and devoured them. It was that quick. And the adversary who was deceiving them was cast into, this is pathetic. And I really, as I'm saying this, I actually feel bad. And I sort of resent my flippant attitude here today. I really do. And I'm going to rejoice, Satan, when I see you come out of this torment to praise your Savior, God. I can't wait for that day. And the adversary was cast into the lake of fire and sulfur where the wild beasts and the false prophet are, and they shall be tormented day and night for the eons of the eons. That's a long time. It's not eternity, though, as the ordinary versions will say. This is the embarrassing part to me. He'll be coming out to deceive all the nations. He's just let out of the submerged chaos. He's like, all right, where are they? Where are they? And he's full of confidence, coming out strutting braggadocio. It's like, I'm the man. And he mobilizes an army, and it's like, wow, I mobilize an army. And it's like God's rolling his eyes, and then a fire descends from heaven, and it sounds something like this. And torched like a marshmallow. Or thousands of individual marshmallows. All right, that's that. So Satan hates this book. You can see why. And so he wants it all allegorized. It doesn't really mean what it says. And Satan, then you think that Satan is like this Herculean figure. And you're going to have this awe and respect for him. When actually, he's put in an ambulance by geeks in blue jumpsuits at a party at which he's trying to look cool after he chokes on an Oscar Mayer wiener. That's embarrassing. So if he can allegorize that, not separately happening, that's a parable, it's a metaphor. Yeah, what are you talking about? Submerged chaos. It's a metaphor. The whole book's figurative. Sound like Rodney Dangerfield. The whole book's figurative, yeah. I don't get no respect. The whole book's figurative. You don't believe anything you read here. Here. You don't believe anything you read here, kids. Nothing to see here. Get away from the book of Revelation. Yeah. Who's telling you it's literal? Zenda, I don't listen to the guy. The guy thinks good is evil, evil's good. That guy's crazy. I don't listen to that Martin Zenda. He don't give me no respect. Yeah, just don't believe anything. It's whatever you want it to be. Go to bed, eat a pizza, have a dream. And whatever you think, that's what it is, okay? You're spiritual. Everybody's spiritual. You don't need to study words. Words are ridiculous. Nah, you don't need to study words. I don't want you to give Martin Zenda any respect. That's Satan. Well, that's all wrong. And so we move on. Prophecy. How much time do I have? Oh, well, God. Prophecy and the seven ecclesias. That's actually the title. And let's see. Prophecy and the seven ecclesias. Oh, whenever you see prophets in Israel, there's trouble in Israel. God sends a prophet to adjust them. They're always in a bad way. When the priesthood was true and the king ruled in the favor of God and everything was great, they didn't need a prophet. So a prophet comes, and a prophet's job is to, get this, interpret the times, The prophet will interpret the times so that the people may know the mind of God and the conduct which will accord with his will. That's a good thing to know, the mind of God, and then to follow it up with conduct. Prediction is only a part of prophecy. It's not the whole shebang. It's only part of it. So I want you to notice this about the seven ecclesias. That takes care of prophecy. remember, prophecy at the beginning of the book of Revelation, prophecy at the end. We're looking at chapter 1, verse 4 to chapter 3, verse 22. That's the prophetic section, the first prophetic section. That's what we're going to be talking about probably for a couple weeks. Chapter 1, verse 4 through chapter 3, verse 22, the seven ecclesias. This is prophecy concerning future ecclesias. Now, I want to tell you something totally cool, and if I end with this, I'll be happy. If this is the last thing I do, if God strikes me dead after I tell you this, then I'll be okay with it. It's the last thing I say. If it's the last thing I say, this is going to be great. And it's Revelation 1, 9. I, John, your brother and joint participant in the affliction and kingdom and endurance of Jesus Christ, came to be in the island of Patmos. Now, John is writing this to the seven ecclesias. But here's the thing, verse 4, John to the seven ecclesias which are in the province of Asia. Let's just start with verse 1. Hang on with me. I'm too excited. The unveiling of Jesus Christ. I hardly know where to put this Bible anymore. My new studio is making me a little crazy, if you can tell. I don't know if you can tell. I'm a little distracted, but I'm trying. I'm trying hard. Just learn from me. Just listen to what I say. That's all I ask. Get something. It's going to be over soon. Just get something. Ignore everything else. Find something here. The unveiling which God gives to him to show his slaves what must occur swiftly, and he signifies it, dispatching through his messenger to his slave John, who testifies. Okay? So John to the seven ecclesias which are in the province of Asia, grace and to you in peace. John to the seven ecclesias. He's writing to the ecclesias which will be there in the future. He's not writing to the ecclesias. This is the weird thing, is John is writing to ecclesias he saw in his vision. I, John, your brother and joint participant. I'm in verse 9. Joint participant in the affliction and kingdom and endurance in Jesus Christ, came to be in the island called Patmos because of the word of God and because of the testimony. I came to be in spirit in the Lord's day. In other words, I came to be in your day. The poor guy's writing on the island of Patmos in the year, whatever, long time ago, and he's writing not to current ecclesias, but he's writing, it must be weird to know that you're writing to people who are going to come 2,000 years after you. It's like writing a letter to your great-great-great-great-grandchildren. Like, I'm going to sit here, and I'm going to write a letter to my great-great-great-grandchild. People do that. They write to their posterity, right? And they sit down and they write a letter to my great-great-great-great-grandson. I don't know what your name is, but I have this to say to you. So it's a wonderful thing. It's cute. Oh, you know, it's nice. You're leaving something behind for future generations. Well, talk about leaving something behind for future generations. How about this John fella? How about him? He's writing, John, to the seven. He's writing in his time to people who are going to be existent 2,000 years. And he's explaining to them why he's writing to them, because he came to be in the Lord's day, where they are. So really, think of the vital line of communication now between John and these ecclesias. When they're reading this, they're not going to feel like we feel, like Paul to the Romans. We know Paul's not writing to us, he's writing to the Romans. But we take it as ours, right? Because he's writing to the nations. So it's not as... That's cool, but it's not as cool as John here writing to people who are going to know that he was in their day, that he somehow visited their day. Paul didn't visit our day. He went to the third heaven, but he didn't visit our present day. It's not like Paul says, I came to be in, you know, Winburg, Pennsylvania in January of 2015. My God, what if he had said that? That would have been kind of like, ooh, I would love to read that letter. It would give me the creeps and send chills down my back. But here, John is writing to an ecclesias that are going to feel so connected to him, in spite of the fact that he's been turned to dust for 2,000 years. Okay, more on this or possibly something else tomorrow.